I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Howard White joins me again, the Harbor Publisher founder and award-winning author and editor, writes the introduction to Raincoast Chronicles 23, their latest. It's a double issue marking the 40th anniversary of Harbor, with pieces from works they've published over the previous two score years. There's a lot of best-selling and award-winning stuff in here from some of British Columbia's best-known and beloved writers. I'll get Mr. White to reflect on what's in this 23rd edition. He and Mary White first published Raincoast Chronicles in 1972, and I'll ask Howard about why they started it. The website for more is at harborpublishing.com. Peter A. Robson is the editor of Raincoast Chronicles 23, and he recently joined me on the program. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program in Madeira Park, B.C., Howard White. Mr. White, good morning.
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Excellent.
I noticed on Facebook earlier this year that your father, Frank, celebrated a significant birthday.
He made it to 101.
Yeah.
We asked him if he's going to do another book this year, because he did one book when he was 99 and another one when he was 101, but he said no, he's out of stories now.
But he's doing well?
He's doing well, yeah. He's getting old, though.
Yeah. Those were great books. I mean, I remember talking about the second one back in December, just how much I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. No, they're getting a terrific reception, selling not bad either. Not too bad for a 101-year-old guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Raincoast Chronicles 23. I saw that on the list the other day. It's on the bestseller list. This one's selling well too, isn't it?
Yeah. It should. It's got some of the best things that we've culled from 40 years of publishing books. We published so many books. I don't even know how many they are. I know we've passed the 600 mark, and I think we're up possibly over the 700 mark now. So there's a lot to choose from there.
Yeah. Do people ask you to explain to them what Raincoast Chronicles is? I mean, do you tell them it's a journal? How do you explain what that is?
Oh, you ask hard questions. It started out as a journal. We thought it was going to be a quarterly history magazine when we started it in 1972. But we underestimated the amount of work and the amount of funds it would take to do four issues a year. And I don't think we ever did more than three, and we only did that in the first year. And then it went down to two, and it went down to one. And we've been going 43 years and only done 23 issues, so it's averaged about one every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we've decided to call it a series of books, that actually works better, because it's more like an anthology book rather than a periodical, although at one time we did offer subscriptions to it.
Mm-hmm.
But now we don't. We just publish it on the average every 2 years, and we usually do a theme issue these days. This is looking back on 40 years of Harbor publishing books, and previous to that we did a series that was edited, a theme issue that was edited by David Kahn on service providers. That sounds like a computer. People who worked in various services, like fisheries officers, mm-hmm. and mission boats, and floating forestry officials up and down the BC coast over the years.
Yeah, and the one before that was Rick James. He edited the collection of shipwrecks in the sort.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in some issues back, Stephen Hume edited one on. Pioneer women of British Columbia. So we've been going more to the theme style in latter years, although occasionally we still do one that's just a grab bag of great stories about the BC coast.
Yeah, and every time I pick one of these up, I see just how rich this place is, this province is, of stories by just a great variety of writers from a variety of points of view. And I guess that was the goal early on, to reflect this place the way you have.
Well, that was the idea. I grew up in various logging camps and small villages on the BC coast, and I was always bedeviled by the fact that in the various books that we were given to read in school and in the newspapers and magazines that I got to look at, there was never anything about the kind of thing that we did here. You know, our readers in school talked about Dick and Jane playing on sidewalks and going up and down buildings and elevators and stuff, which was, you know, like science fiction to me. And I thought, you know, there should be more stories about little kids that ran around on their father's log booms and had seagulls for pets and played in rowboats rather than on sidewalks. It sort of made me feel that there was something not quite legitimate about the way we lived on the West Coast. When I grew up and realized that it was just as legitimate as any other place, it just wasn't confirmed in any kind of written culture, I decided to get busy and get some of the stories of the West Coast into print so that other kids following in my footsteps would be able to pick them up and see their own lives reflected a bit in books. And so that fueled the first issues of Raincoast Chronicles, and it fueled the startup of the book publishing operation, yeah. Harbor Publishing, and has now expanded to over 700 books.
And I mean, I shudder to think that if you hadn't published some of the stories that you have, these would have just gone to the storytellers' deaths. I mean, you know, they would have gone with them, I should say.
Yes, I definitely think that most of the stories that are in Raincoast Chronicles, and also most of the stories that we've published books about, would not have been published otherwise. Nobody was doing it at the time we started, and still there aren't many doing it, although there are a few. So we've hopefully had an influence in showing other publishers that indeed BC people are very interested in their own history and their own culture, and will support books about that. A lot of our books have sold 5,000, 10,000, even the collected edition of the first five issues of Raincoast Chronicles sold over 50,000, which are just, you know, phenomenal numbers in Canadian publishing, even for books that are of national interest.
And yeah.
When I go to Toronto and tell people that we published a book that sold 50,000 copies in BC alone, they really don't believe me. They think I'm making it up.
So Raincoast Chronicles, the 23rd edition, celebrates, as we've said already, the 40th anniversary of Harbor. What sort of role did you have? Was it Robson that picked what's in this book, or did you?
Well, I started it. It was my idea, and I started it, and I started looking over all the Harbor books, and I realized that if it was left to me, because I love so many of those stories, that I'd never fit it into 160 pages. So Peter Robson is an editor and a journalist who, in an earlier life, was our managing editor and production manager for 10 years at Harbor. And I know he has a bit of a more business-like attitude, so I asked him if he would come in and be the guest editor and make the choices, and of course he ran them past me. But I think he did a tremendous job in finding 30 or so stories from the various books that communicate the flavor of Harbor's output, and also are individually each one a great read.
Yeah, they are. And what do you think this collection represents about, say, this place, about British Columbia? Because, I mean, a lot of what we've read that you've published over the years defines BC to ourselves, but also BC to the wider world.
Well, it really shows that BC is quite different than the rest of Canada, particularly the BC coast, where Rinko's Chronicles was focused. There's this string of little maritime villages that in the early days were very isolated from each other, except for the steamers that came along once a week or so and brought news of the city. And, they were very defined by the local industries. Most of the men worked in either the lumbering industry or the fishing industry. So there's a lot about both logging and fishing in Rinko's Chronicles. Or pioneering. There was a lot of people who just saw the BC coast as a very idyllic place where they would like to just settle down, clear off the trees, and start a small farm. And most of those enterprises didn't last very long, but a lot of people tried it. So you had a type of person who was attracted here, was very enterprising and very independent. I think there was, a sorting out process in Canadian settlement where the people who fitted in better and were happy to work for a big company and be part of settled society, they stuck in places like Ontario, and the more oddball types who couldn't fit in kept moving west, and they all ended up at the edge here in BC and on the BC coast, and they were ornery characters with a lot of personality, and also very resourceful. You had mm-hmm. to be very resourceful and pretty good at survival to survive here on the coast in the early days. And I think that flavor comes through in the various stories in Rinko's Chronicles.
Indeed it does, yeah. When you look back at these last, I guess it's 41 years since Harbor began publishing, 43 years since Rinko's Chronicles started, you mentioned earlier, it's over 700 books. I mean, that's a hell of an achievement, isn't it?
Well, once we hung up our shingle, the floodgates opened and the manuscripts just came pouring in, and we didn't have a chance to come up for air. My wife and I have a hard time believing that 41 years have passed. I mean, seems like only yesterday we said, well, maybe we should publish a book. And no sooner did we have that thought than, we were swamped with material because there had been this huge need. There'd been this big backlog of stories building up over the years. We didn't realize it, but as soon as we announced we were game to start publishing these books, people started writing them or sending in manuscripts they'd already written, and we just sort of got carried away on the tide.
And this is just my observation, looking at your operation there. It just seems to be growing year after year. Is the business good?
Well, it's publishing. It's book publishing, trade book publishing. Mm-hmm. So that is a marginal occupation wherever it occurs anywhere in the world. it's never been lucrative in terms of economics, but there another characteristic about the BC people, these ornery, independent, resourceful people that settled this part of the world, they were also very literate and great writers of letters to the editor and anybody else who would read them. So they've been very productive of book manuscripts. And at the same time, thankfully, they're very good readers. I guess they developed that habit being isolated in their little communities, which are not so isolated anymore, but BC people still every year lead the nation in the number of books borrowed from libraries and the number of books purchased. So in that sense, it was a very good place to set up a publishing operation. And we've managed to keep alive and keep growing, although, you know, we never set out to be a big publisher. We just wanted to amuse ourselves and earn a modest living here and not have to leave Pender Harbor like so many of our contemporaries did.
Right.
And that we've been able to do.
Yeah, and so the biggest challenges today as a book publisher, I mean, I guess all media is feeling the pinch. What do you find is your biggest challenge?
Well, you know, people always we're finding a lot of challenges today, and a lot of regional BC publishers and national Canadian publishers have gone under in the past 10 years, and everybody assumes that's because of the media challenge, the new media, the e-books and so on. But actually, e-books are not a problem for us at all. They're not very popular in BC. I don't think they amount to even 5% of our total sales. But, you know, if they did increase, we'd be happy to supply the need, because we produce e-books of all our books now. And it's actually a very convenient way to publish.
Yeah.
But really what's happening is the corporate structure of the book industry has changed so much. When we first started, we only dealt with independent bookstores, and they were wonderful to deal with. They loved books, and they loved our books, and everything we put out, they would just order automatically and keep in stock. And now most of our sales are done through huge corporations. We're lucky if they have offices in Toronto. Some of them have offices in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, trying to discuss with someone in Scranton, Pennsylvania, why they should stock a reprint of our History of the Village of Santula, say, is a bizarre conversation. I mean, they barely know where British Columbia is, let alone Santula. So that has made it more difficult to get our books to the readers, because there's this sort of corporate structure in between now, which is not terribly sympathetic to Canadian content, and specifically regional Canadian content. So where we used to be able to count on all our books being in the front window of Duthy Books in Vancouver when they existed, now they're in the back room of the big bookstores in Vancouver that still exist.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle to keep them there. They keep getting returned. And, you know, that has, you know, kind of pushed Canadian books to the back of the bus and made it more difficult. That's our biggest challenge.
Yeah.
It's a boring story, but that's basically what we face.
And a couple of years ago, Harbor took over Douglas and McIntyre. How has that been in terms of say, gaining an audience for the books nationally? I mean, I remember reading at the time when this all happened that was one of the goals, was to continue the national audience, the national profile that you had for your authors in that imprint.
Yeah, well, we Douglas and McIntyre was the biggest publisher in BC for many, many years, and I couldn't believe it when they ran into trouble, although I understood perfectly well why they had, is some of the reasons I've just been explaining.
Mm-hmm.
We just wanted to save those great books that they had already done. That was our number one objective, and we've been able to do that. That worked out fine. We also realized that in taking over their operation, we were inheriting a good market machine that was set up in Ontario much more strongly than our own Harbor Publishing one was, because our books are mostly regional.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have been able to maintain that. We've just changed our distributor from HarperCollins to University of Toronto Press, but kept it in Toronto for the UT, the Douglas and McIntyre books. And we have a small office there with a publicist and a sales manager. We're continuing to keep a national list going through Douglas and McIntyre, and it's working. It's it's much trickier than the regional list that we know so well, because we're both well established here, and we understand the market here much better. But nationally, it's more of a crapshoot to try and decide what's going to go good this year.
Yeah.
And but we're putting out a dozen or so national titles a year through D&M, and it's not the volume that D&M formerly had, but it's the same style of book. National political issues and fiction, and
some of the cooking books, I mean, are just beautiful.
Yes, that's the work of our managing editor, Anna Comfort O'Keefe, who's a fabulous cook herself and has a great interest in gardening and cooking, and has developed a tremendous list of both regional and national cooking and gardening books.
Well, when you set out, say, the next season's batch of books, I'm curious to know what insight you can give us in terms of what you decide to publish. I mean, are books by, say, Roy Henry Vickers and Mike McArdle, are those givens every season?
Well, you're lucky when you have a really well-known and well-established author like them to work with. I mean, that makes your work a lot easier and takes a lot of the guesswork out of it, because those people have ready-made audiences out there that are guaranteed to support their books. Other books, like one we just did by Amanda Bath on the landslides that occurred in the tiny village of Johnson's Landing,
mm-hmm.
Several years ago. That was more of a gamble, because although it was an extremely fascinating and well-written book, it was about a really small disaster in a very remote place, and I wondered how many people would even remember it enough to pick up the book, because once I picked up the book and started reading it, I realized they would love it and think, okay, well, this is a great story about personal tragedy. But you know, how easy is it going to be to draw people to that topic? Mm-hmm. So books like that are always a gamble, and a certain amount of luck is involved in deciding whether they get discovered and become big media stories or whether they sort of fall stillborn from the press. And that one is doing so-so. I mean, it's doing extremely well in the Kootenays, where Johnson's Landing is, but is not being noticed much in Toronto. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it goes back to what I said earlier. That, I mean, you really are providing a service here. I mean, if you hadn't published that book, that history would possibly be gone, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think if we hadn't published it, nobody else in the world would have. You know, she would have probably had to self-publish it and sell 50 copies or something.
Yeah.
But I always thought that, you know, there would be more people see from our example that there is a good market in British Columbia for local stories, and more publishers would start up in places like the Kootenays, and, you know, where they'd look at it and say, well, if Harbor can publish 25 books a year in the tiny village of Bender Harbor, we should be able to do it here. But and there's been some of that, like I say, but it hasn't caught on to the extent that I one time thought it would.
And looking ahead, I mean, do you have a sense of where Harbor will be, say, 40 years down the road?
Well, it's hard to say where the world will be 40 years down the road, but if the world is still here and still in roughly the same shape it is now, I bet BC people will be just as interested in stories about their province as they are now. And if there's someone here who's willing to spend all their time stick handling those stories into the public spaces and not mind working 16 hours a day and getting the same wages as a school bus driver or something like that, I bet it'll still be carrying on.
Yeah, well, you'll have an audience for sure. I mean, regardless, BC, I mean, as you said earlier, I mean, we're pretty literate people, aren't we?
So far we are, and,
yeah.
And what's interesting to me is even the new people who are moving into BC seem to bring that with them, and even, you know, a lot of our staff here that we, interns who come here, are first generation Canadians whose parents, you know, moved in from Hong Kong or India. And they're just as fascinated by BC history as anybody else. So
yeah.
It seems to be transferring from one generation to another.
Yeah. Howard, you're someone I've come to admire a great deal over the years, your work and Harbor's output season after season. It's just a delight and a service for all of us. It's always nice talking. All the best.
All right. Thank you very much, Joseph. It's always a pleasure.
The book is called Raincoast Chronicles 23. Do pick it up. It's a marvelous sketch of the past 40 years of Harbor, and the stories in it are just wonderful, and there's some excellent writers in it, and some great poetry and marvelous photographs. It's edited by Peter Robson, and of course its publisher is Harbor. Howard White, join me on the line from Madeira Park, British Columbia in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.